Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. That's it, it's just the show. Welcome back. It's good to have everybody here. We're all in upbeat spirits here at the McBurney compound as we await a livestock event. A livestock event. Although, I think to qualify as livestock, I think there has to be some possibility that in the near future, the animal will either be sold or eaten. And that's really not the case. So I don't know if I can call this a livestock event. But I'll get about a pet event. It's just an unusual type of pet. I'll come back to that because I don't want to bore you with events around the McBurney compound when there's important news to discuss. Actually, I'd rather talk about, you know, we have two peahens, which are like peacocks, but they're female. So they're peahen. They're called peafowl. An annoying bird is what they are. But anyway, our two peahens are raising two chicks. Chicken chicks. Not peafowl chicks. But chicken chicks. Eggs that were abandoned by their mother. The peahen sat on them. And now the two chicken chicks follow the peahen around and sleep with the peahen at night. It's interesting. We also have one orphan chick. Orphan chick. The mom just left, just bailed. She was done. And so the orphan chick has been bouncing from hen to hen trying to figure out who's mama. And nobody wants to be the orphan chick's mama. And so now the orphan chick has befriended the two chicks being raised by the peahen. And so now they hang out together at night when things are frightful. That's not the event that I'm referring to. I'll come back to the big event, but I want to go to the Say You Want a Revolution file where Breitbart is reporting. I'm sorry. This is the French press agency via Breitbart, the aggregator, brought to you by Breitbart.com. Nike reported a loss. Nike, the shoe company that employed Afrocentric ex-NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Nike has reported a loss of $790 million in the quarter ending May 31st. That's right, Nike's on a different fiscal calendar than most people. And so they lost nearly $1 billion. Over $750 million Nike lost in the most recent quarter ending May 31st. So let's see, a quarter. If you matriculated in the government schools, you may not know what a quarter is. A quarter is 3 months. May, April, March. Probably the three worst months in the history of business in the United States of America were March, April, and May of 2020. And during that time, Nike reports a loss of $790 million. But here's what's interesting about that. Besides the fact that I hate Nike for bowing before the Marxist revolutionaries who run Black Lives Matter, and the Marxist revolutionary who is Colin Kaepernick and hiring him. What's interesting is North American revenues in particular plunged 46%. Not surprising, you would say, right? Because of the lockdown, nobody was able to go to the shoe store. But as you read a little bit further into the story, you'll see that digital sales for Nike increased by 75% during the quarter. So the people who wanted to buy Nike shoes were still buying Nike shoes. They were just doing it online. And apparently there's a lot fewer people who want to buy Nike products. Maybe because they've offended so many normal people with their bowing and scraping to the Afrocentric. He's not even Afrocentric, actually. He's Marxocentric. Forget the Afrocentric. Because anyway, I read up on the founder of Black Lives Matter. Dude, I don't know if I have that story. I don't think I printed it out. It was too long. Anyway, I will try to link to it. But the founder of Black Lives Matter doesn't define black by the level of melanin in one's skin. The founder of Black Lives Matter, I'm sorry, he's not the founder. He's the Harvard professor who educated the founders of Black Lives Matter. He's their inspiration. And he defines black not as the level of melanin content in one's skin, but by one's adherence to Marxist philosophy. That's right. The more Marxist you are, the blacker you are. The more in favor of freedom and liberty and the free market you are, that's defined as white. And so the Harvard professor, whose name escapes me, but I'm Googling it right now so that I can let you folks know. Yes, here it is. Noel Ignatieff. Noel Ignatieff is a Marxist professor, Harvard University. And he basically is the inspiration for Black Lives Matter. Anyway, I'll link to the article. But he basically created one of the most diabolical philosophical constructs in the history of civilization when he married Marxist agitation and revolutionary philosophy with black supremacist philosophy. And he basically created the equivalent of a philosophical biological nuclear weapon that's being detonated upon America and the rest of the world to some extent right now. And so anyway, I'll post the link to it. Read up on Noel Ignatieff, a very interesting, diabolical, evil guy. And by the way, he's dead. He did get to see the Black Lives Matter protests in 2017. So he was able to top off his body of work, so to speak, before he passed on to the judgment of the living and the dead, and to dwell with the dead forever. Anyway, but what an evil, diabolical guy. I'll link to it on the blog if you want to find out more about what Black Lives Matter really means. It has nothing to do with blackness or whiteness in any sense that you or I had thought. But instead, let's go to the widespread delusion file where Vice President Mike Pence, who is a part of the delusion, that the COVID-19 delusion, as is Donald Trump. In an interview, he claimed that the lockdown saved 2 million lives. We saved 2 million lives, Donald Trump was allowed to say in an interview. All right. Anyway, so are Republicans ever going to call out Donald Trump and Mike Pence on the fact that they flinched when they say, well, we saved 2 million lives? Isn't anyone going to say, but the 2 million lives were never going to be lost, Mr. President? You were utterly bamboozled and fooled and played and flinched and all of that. No, they'll never call him out. Why? Because Donald Trump and Mike Pence are the saviors of America. Here's what Mike Pence said at a briefing on Friday. He said, we should press ahead with reopening the economy, but we need to do it safely. Safely! Yeah. He says all 50 states are opening up safely and responsibly. But cases are rising, and President Trump has directed our task force to brief the American people, which is why Mike Pence was out there Friday on orders from Donald Trump to reorganize the COVID-19, what did he call it? Task force to brief the American people, because they're buying into this idiocy that we can go on about our normal lives and not see more cases of COVID-19. It's just not possible, folks. Anyway, anyone who thinks we can stop the spread of an airborne respiratory virus is a fool. The horse left the barn. It's time to get on with life. And I'll say it for the six millionth time. How many? Million and sixth time? We're all going to eventually get this. Most of us. And some of us are going to get sick, and some of us are going to die. Anyway, Mike Pence says the United States is in a much better place than it was 2 months ago, meaning maybe he's like Joe Biden and he doesn't know where he is. Mr. Pence, we're not in a better place than we were 2 months ago. 2 months ago, we were in a catastrophic economic and economic disaster and a failure of courage. And now you add to that, we're in the midst of a Marxist revolution. So we're not in a better place than we were 2 months ago, Mike. And you are primarily responsible for it. You and Mr. Trump and the Democrats and all of you. Pathetic. But for some good news, folks, we go to the politics file where we're going to visit South Dakota. Which, if you want to visit South Dakota, this is the time of year to do it. South Dakota is beautiful this time of year. I highly recommend Spearfish. And the whole Black Hills, that whole experience is awesome this time of year. One person standing out, according to the AmericanThinker.com blog, one person standing out in the midst of a bunch of quivering, flinching, slope-shouldered, lily-livered, jelly-spined men is South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. So when all the men have been feminized and flinch and whimper, leave it to a woman to stand up and show them how to do it. Kristi Noem is doing it. The American Thinker reports with Washington, Jefferson, and other statues being toppled, maybe Mount Rushmore is next. That's what Ben Shapiro wrote. He asked that open question. And Governor Noem in South Dakota says, no, not on my watch. It's not happening. Nobody's going to attack Mount Rushmore because, as the American Thinker reports, Noem stands as a rock in a sea of human jellyfish. That's the Republican men, is the sea of human jellyfish. She is the governor who refused to lock down her state's economy during the coronavirus epidemic. That's right. There was a governor who didn't lock down, and it was Governor Kristi Noem in South Dakota. And in the end, South Dakota suffered relatively little damage compared to all the other states who destroyed their economies. Early in the COVID-19 epidemic, Governor Noem gave a press conference in which she said that South Dakotans are free Americans. What? Shocking! That's right. She said that South Dakotans could look after their own health. Thank you very much. So her administration put out a steady stream of data and advice, but she refused to order anyone to do anything. South Dakota has a very low level of COVID fatality and the lowest unemployment rate in the country. Nice. All right. So anyway, just thank you, Governor Kristi Noem. I think you should be the president. Depending on where she stands on other fundamental values, I would probably vote for Kristi Noem for president over Donald Trump. Donald Trump, a relatively dim-witted, vulgar celebrity for my entire adult life, and a Democrat and a liberal until all of a sudden he became the savior of the Republican Party. Snap out of it, people. Snap out of it. All right. Meanwhile, continue. Back to the widespread delusion file where Lincoln County, Oregon, at the beginning of last week, passed an order requiring face coverings. Face coverings. Yes, yes, yes. But their order was unique in that it exempted black people. I'm sorry. It exempted non-white people from the new order to prevent racial profiling. Yeah. You know what racial profiling is. It's when you pull up behind a Subaru WRX with a giant spoiler on the back and you assume it's an Asian teenage boy. That's racial profiling. No, that's not what they're talking about here because Asians are not exempt. Asians and white people are not exempt from anything. We bear the brunt of everything because of all of our privilege. Now this order was rescinded by the end of the week because everybody realized how racist they looked and stupid and all of that. Anyway, all right, health officials, I'll just finish the story. Health officials announced that residents must wear face coverings in public settings where they may come within 6 feet of another individual who is not from the same household. Now, you all can just feel free to ridicule that at will. First of all, where'd you come up with the 6 feet? And is it 6 feet or the mask, or 6 feet and the mask? And why do you say I can take the mask off only when I'm in close quarters with the people I love the most who I might infect? Okay, there's 6 ways from Sunday to ridicule the order of this of these anonymous health officials. What is a health official? Anyway, they said they initially said people of color. That means Marxists, I guess, by the new Black Lives Matter construct. People of color do not have to follow the rule if they have heightened concerns about racial profiling and harassment. The order concluded with this line: no person shall intimidate or harass people who do not comply. So basically, at the end of the order, it said, we really are not giving you any orders. So this was an exercise in virtue signaling. Who was it? Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell said, listen to this, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer, because she's the only person I care who's listening. If all of you people don't listen, I don't care. She's listening. Mitch McConnell said that wearing a face covering signals other people that you care about other people's lives. Yeah, you care about protecting other people, I think is how he said. Well, wearing a face covering is a signal, so it lets other people know you care about their safety, you care about their lives, said Mitch McConnell, who probably, because of the way he's lived his life, he has to actually signal people that he cares about other people's lives, because he's destroyed so many throughout his political career that in order for anyone to think he cares about other people's lives and safety, he has to send them a signal. Mitch, there are some amongst us who have actually saved other people's lives, actually. And we work every day to sustain the lives of other people who without us could not care for themselves. Mitch, we don't need to signal people that we care about other people's lives and safety. We live it every day, Mitch. You go ahead and signal, Mitch. We are free Americans and we are merely going to live. That's right. That is the attitude of everyone perpetuating the COVID-19 delusion. Everyone participating in the delusion that we're going to somehow stop this virus. Or the delusion that this virus poses a significantly greater threat to our lives than a host of other microbes. It's incredible. It's mass delusion. And I can assure you that the Marxist revolution that's being attempted right now, the Marxist coup that's being executed across America right now, would not be possible had it not been for the COVID-19 delusion that we're all, well, I'm not participating, frankly. But anyway, now we go to, speaking of the delusion, we go to the rare courage file. Yes, where a Washington State sheriff, this is Sheriff Robert Snazza. Robert Snazza from Lewis County in Washington State gave a speech in a church parking lot on Tuesday after Governor Inslee there ordered everyone in Washington to wear face coverings when they're out of their house. So Governor Inslee apparently doesn't care about you infecting the people you love the most. He only cares about you when you're outside or at a private business. And so, recognizing the ridiculous nature of the governor ordering people to wear face coverings, the sheriff stood up and grabbed a bullhorn in the parking lot of a church on Tuesday. And here's what he said. He said, folks, Governor Inslee in his infinite wisdom has decided, after over 100-some-odd days since the pandemic was recognized as a crisis, that now we should all start wearing face masks, whether we're inside or outside. Here's what I say. Don't be a sheep. And the crowd went wild. And they all hugged him and shook his hand as if they weren't worried that he was going to kill them with an infectious microbe. Like normal free Americans, they shook his hand. Anyway. Now listen to this. Inslee's order, by the way. He orders people to wear face masks or face a $1,000 fine and up to 90 days in jail. Why is he ordering everyone in Washington State to wear face masks? To slow the spread of COVID-19. Hey, Governor Inslee, we already played along with that slow the spread game. You're not going to slow... Why do we need to slow the spread now? I thought it was an emergency. The hospitals were going to be overrun. The streets were going to be piling up with bodies. Hey, the order, the potential crisis that gave you this power, Governor Inslee, is over with. Am I repeating myself? I apologize. The governors no longer have this authority. This was an emergency, right? Remember? All right. Anyway, before the speech given by Sheriff Robert Snazza over there in Lewis County, Washington, the crowd had gathered at a billboard that reads... The billboard reads, "Oh no, a virus! Quick, burn the Bill of Rights." that billboard was erected next to I-5 in Napa Vine, Washington. Klickitat County Sheriff Bob Songer also spoke out, saying he would not enforce the order of Governor Inslee, who he called an idiot. In public, in front of God and everybody. It's about time. I wish our sheriff would stand up. Where's our slope-shouldered, jelly-spined sheriff? By the way, they're not enforcing the mask order because they can't. It's not enforceable. By the way, you don't have to wear a mask, you know? Anyway, you just use your brain. You can always outsmart idiots. All right, now, meanwhile, we go to the widespread, deeper into the widespread delusion file, where we are reminded by an author at thedailyfodder.com, The Daily Fodder, F-O-D-D-E-R, thedailyfodder.com. Author Dorothy Sayers once observed that one of the downsides of the modern age is that humans are ill-equipped to resist an endless onslaught of messaging. Messaging. I know, I've felt that way. How many streams of information do I have coming into my life? I've got my email, I've got my cell phone, I've got texts, I've got Facebook and Twitter, I've got Slack chat, and this and that, right? How many streams can I take? I remember, before things crashed, I can remember some days where I felt like I was literally swept up in a wave of information every day. And it would deposit me 12 hours later, dizzy and sweating and breathing heavy, just trying to absorb all the information. But, you know, if you want to earn a good living, you have to work hard every day. It's not easy, right? So anyway, this author, Dorothy Sayers, made that observation. Sayers wondered if the conditions of the modern world had made humans susceptible to the influence of advertisement and mass propaganda to an extent hitherto unheard of and unimagined. Pretty prescient. Because author Dorothy Sayers wrote those words in 1947. 1947, a year before George Orwell's own dark premonitions on propaganda and control were published in his classic work, 1984, which was published in 1948. That's where he got the title. He just switched the numbers. So 1947 was, radio was big. Television was in its infancy in 1947. And Orwell and Dorothy Sayers were frightened that the general human condition meant that, mass propaganda could make people, could control people. We go now to Claire Lehman, editor of Quillette. She recently observed that the psychology of crowds is a fascinating thing. Once a certain number of ideologues take hold, a tipping point is reached and the herd just follows along. And that's what's happening. That's what happened with the COVID-19 flinch. And it's what's happening right now with the Marxist revolution being executed in the streets of America right in broad daylight. Anyway, the Daily Fodder then offers quotes on conformity and nonconformity. I threw a bunch of them out because I don't believe in nonconformity for nonconformity's sake. And some people do. I'm not an iconoclast. I don't believe in smashing and breaking statues just so that we can break with the past. And I don't believe in nonconformity just for nonconformity's sake. But I picked out five of these quotes that I thought were worthy of the Weekly Worldview. First, from Rudyard Kipling, 1935, in a quote often misattributed to Nietzsche, Rudyard Kipling said, "The individual has always had to struggle to keep from being overwhelmed by the tribe. If you try it, you will be lonely often and sometimes frightened. But no price is too high to pay for the privilege of owning yourself." Next, Ralph Waldo Emerson, from Self-Reliance in 1841, he says, "It is easy in the world to live after the world's opinion. It is easy in solitude after our own. But the great man is he who in the midst of the crowd keeps with perfect sweetness the independence of solitude." That defines how I feel at the grocery store every day. Should I tell my grocery store story now? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to tell you a story about the grocery store. All right, so my extremely attractive audio engineer and I, we went to a grocery store in a local neighborhood, and it's not the normal grocery store. No, it's one of these boutique grocery stores. I will not name it, but you know what I mean. It's one of those grocery stores where the selection is more limited than the traditional grocery store, and you get to pay a 20% premium to shop with NPR donors who all have celiac disease and peanut allergies, and they prefer organic. Okay? So we went to one of those grocery stores because the beef was on sale. And I don't know if you people have noticed, but the price of beef has been skyrocketing. And so my intake of beef is on the downside. And we wanted to get some beef, so we went to the boutique grocery store and were immediately assailed. For the first time, I was assailed by just a regular civilian shopper about the fact that I wasn't wearing a mask. "Where's your mask?" said the masked Nazi, right? Who probably supports abortion, homosexuality, and legalized marijuana. He cares so much about other people that he's concerned that I'm not wearing a mask. And I can't remember what I said to the guy. Oh, I said, "I don't have to wear a mask. I have a health condition." And he did. His eyes bugged out a little bit, and he didn't know what to say. A hippie, like long gray and black hair. That's a sign of a failed life, right? Long locks of black hair mixed with gray means you're a failure. So, and then within 15 feet of the civilian mask Nazi, I have a store mask Nazi who comes up to me and she says, "Sir, if you're going to be in the store, you have to wear a mask." I said, "Actually, I don't." And she stopped because no one had ever said that to her before. I said, "I have a health condition that exempts me from the order to wear a mask." "Oh, that's all I needed to know, sir." She walked away. proving that the mask is stupid. Because if you really believed that the mask was essential, you wouldn't let anyone in your store without a mask.
Especially if you have a haircut.
Yeah, and what I might have, I have COVID-19 is what it is. I'm having a little hard time breathing. Thank you very much. Anyway, I have to get on a plane in a couple of weeks, and I'm not going to wear a mask, and I'm just going to tell them. Well, you guys have heard. I'm not going to repeat myself. Anyway, that's my story of my mask up. It's not a dust up. It's a mask up. I would have called it a dust up because there was a bit of a conflict involved, but in the modern era, we'll go with a mask up. That's why. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and if you're not sweating at the end of that bumper, you're just not into it. That's all. You're just not into it enough. All right. Now, do I want to continue with the... I want to do the livestock events, but I'll finish with my with the quotes offered by the Daily Fodder on conformity and nonconformity. Adlai Stevenson, who I'm sure I agreed with on very little. He said, "All progress has resulted from people who took unpopular positions." So true. Henry David Thoreau said, "Every generation laughs at the old fashions, but follows religiously the new." And finally, Robert Frost. "Somewhere, ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by. And that has made all the difference." Now that's good writing. All right. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, all white guys. That was not intentional. I don't mean to offend anyone. I should have mixed in one Marxist just so I could religiously follow the new fashion. But just by chance, the five I picked happened to be written by white guys. Anyway, that's exposing my white racist privilege. I'm so sorry. Meanwhile, we go now over to Italy, where Dr. Matteo Bassetti works as a doctor. He's the director of infectious diseases and the San Martino Hospital in Genoa, Italy. Genoa, Italy was one of the hardest hit. This fellow is also the president of the Italian Society of Anti-Infection Therapy. This is in the Lombardy region that was hard hit by the initial epidemic. He says, quote, "Coronavirus has gone from being a tiger to a pussycat." Yep, he's, let's see, "Asymptomatic cases of the virus that are emerging thanks to extensive testing should be treated differently," he says, "than the once rabid symptomatic cases months ago." He says, "We are continuing to isolate all those with positive swabs at home or in the hospital, even those with a very low viral load." And he says that policy is very wrong. He says it's wrong to keep acting like this is the pandemic to end all pandemics and that it's going to kill everybody. Just anyway, according to the WHO's current COVID-19 fact sheet, You can read it for yourselves, folks. This is not a right-wing conspiracy written by the guys over at InfoWars who think the whole virus is a made-up false flag. This is the WHO. They say, to date, there has been no documented asymptomatic transmission. Even though this does not exclude the possibility that it may theoretically occur, says the author at Breitbart. Okay, well, listen, if it theoretically occurs, that doesn't really matter, does it? Okay. I mean, if you want to talk about just a thought experiment or a mental exercise or an academic, well, sure, we could talk about theoretically just about anything occurring. But now that we're 6 months into the epidemic, if there were asymptomatic transmission, it would be documented by now. So yes, it could occur theoretically, but it does not in actual real life, like every other coronavirus. Early reports, we go back to Breitbart. Early reports of asymptomatic transmission of the virus were all later debunked, but only after fear of asymptomatic carriers had taken hold in the public consciousness. And that is so true. Leading to widespread use of masks by healthy people out of concern that they could be unwitting transmitters of the disease. And then it went from that into a political virtue signaling, self-righteous expression of Marxism, frankly. And those of you who go along with the masks, Sean Hannity, you're buying into a Marxist construct, a big fat lie. And if you do that just to make yourself feel better, well, you deserve what you deserve the judgment you shall receive from history. All of you. Sean Hannity, the most disgusting and just flagrantly feminized wuss of them all. All right. Do we have anything else on coronavirus? Oh, one more thing on the coronavirus from the High Crimes File. The High Crimes File. You've probably heard, says justthenews.com, you've probably heard that COVID-19 is far deadlier from the flu. You've probably also heard that it could turn out to be more akin to severe flu season. Why have you probably heard those? Because both of those assessments have come out of the mouth of the same man, Dr. Anthony Fauci. It just depends on the audience. That's right. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. On March 11th, in congressional testimony, he said, quote, coronavirus is 10 times more lethal than the seasonal flu. That's what he said in congressional testimony. That would make it about 1%, right? 1 in 100 people who get it die. His testimony generated news headlines, right? March 11th, right? It also generated the emergency declarations, the lockdowns, this along with the bogus model Neil Ferguson. And, by the way, justthenews.com reminds us that this testimony and that quote remains frequently cited to this very day. Well, now he wrote an article that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine a few weeks later on March 26, in which he said, quote, the case fatality rate may be considerably less than 1%. It may ultimately be more akin to those of a severe seasonal influenza, which has a case fatality rate of approximately 0.1%. So when Anthony Fauci wanted to take part in the Marxist takedown of America, I'm beginning to suspect that Dr. Fauci is a deep state Marxist and an anti-Trumper and an anti-American and all of that. I'm beginning to suspect, because why else would he go before Congress and say something that could crash the entire country, which he did, but then when he has to write a paper that'll be peer-reviewed and will have an impact on his scientific reputation, why does he say what's really true? Because as I proffered a few weeks ago, it's quite possible that we're all the victims of a very bad James Bond movie plot, and four relatively obscure academics were given the opportunity to take over the country, and they did it. Not the country, the world. That's right, it's James Bond. James Bond, it's the whole world. All right. Anyway, and then justthenews.com goes on to just remind us that Anthony Fauci on March 27th, this is So we've got what he said before he wrote the paper. He said it's 10 times more deadly than the flu. Then he wrote the paper where he says it's probably less than 0.1%. And then he goes on Trevor Noah's show, which is apparently a TV show on Comedy Central that I'm unfamiliar with. But on March 27th, Fauci said the mortality of COVID-19 is about 10 times the flu. All right, so that's why it's in the high crimes. Anthony Fauci should probably be arrested for what he's done. And here we've got the documented evidence that he wittingly told a lie that led to the greatest catastrophic failure of courage in the history of mankind and the self-inflicted suicide of the global economy. And there it is. It's documented right there. This is not a right-wing conspiracy tinfoil hat. These are just what Fauci said and when he said them. You can go check it out yourselves, folks. I researched it myself. Took off my tinfoil hat long enough to... All right. Meanwhile, you know what? I'm tired of it. Here at the McBurney compound, we are all on pins and needles because we've had a series of livestock events that are now leading to, we had a duck disappear into thin air a few weeks ago, bringing the count of ducks on the McBurney compound then down to just two. So we were sad. But then a few days later, we found that the ducks had secretly been laying eggs in a secret little area there that nobody knew about. And we found 9 duck eggs. And now, I don't know if the departed duck had laid any of the eggs. I can't remember. Is it possible the departed duck? Oh, that was a boy. Okay, but Mama Duck, the female, had been secretly laying eggs and preparing a nest. We didn't know that. And we didn't know it until Duck number 2, Mama Duck, she disappeared. And for nearly 48 hours, we assumed that she had met the same fate as male duck number 1 back a few weeks ago. But then we found Mama Duck on the 9 eggs in her secret, super hidden nesting area there. And so there was rejoicing at the McBurney compound because, yes, we had lost one duck, but now we had the potential for 9 more. And Mama Duck sat on those eggs for almost 3 weeks. Until Mama Duck was taken, and Mama Duck was eaten by a wild animal. And so now there was mourning at the McBurney compound, because not only now is Mama Duck gone, but now the 9 eggs have no Mama Duck, and that doesn't work. And so the bird whisperer sprung into action and dusted off the incubator, and put 7, now the incubator only holds 7 eggs, but we got all 7 eggs in the incubator, and we are anxiously anticipating the hatching or the not hatching. We don't know. There will be rejoicing or mourning at the McBurney compound, depending on, and by the way, the other 2 eggs that wouldn't fit into the incubator, the bird whisperer somehow convinced a chicken to sit on them, and the chicken complied. How does that happen? What kind of communication system does the bird whisperer has that she just tells a chicken to sit on the eggs?
Too much. Yeah, come on.
It was already a potentially broody hen. All right, I'll give her. She knew how to pick her chickens. So anyway, that's what we got going on. And we were fortunate enough over this past week to find a man who relocates roosters. That's right, and he doesn't ask any questions, and you don't ask any questions, and he doesn't say. The roosters just go wherever he takes the roosters. Well, we suspect he's going to eat them.
He said that he's going to.
I know. I'm trying to be funny. It's one of these things where you don't want to know what. Here's the thing, folks. I bought the cone and the chicken defeathering apparatus, and I was preparing to kill and butcher and eat the roosters myself. Until I found out that there was another guy willing to do it. And so I'm going to let him do it because I don't want to do it. I'm not manly enough. That's what it is.
We go to the grocery store.
That's right. That's right. That's right. I shop at the boutique grocery store. No, he's going to butcher and eat the chickens. He was the roosters. He was plain about that. And we're okay with that. But he did confess to us that he has to send his wife and children away when he butchers the chickens or they won't eat them. Interesting insight into human nature. All right. Okay. Do I want to do anything more on the coronavirus? Yeah. Well, let me just finish it off, okay? You cannot live your life based on a daily stream of data about whether or not you're going to live or die. This daily body count, it's not healthy. They need to cut it out. Because you could pick 10 other morbidities, now that we all know the word morbidity. Now, that's what we've all been sitting around for 3 months pondering morbidity. No wonder everyone's depressed. So if you could pick 10 morbidities and the media could feed you a daily stream about how many people in your town died of it, well, it'll eventually, you'll never leave your house. I mean, come on, folks. I mean, if you watch the daily stream of data, what does it mean? What's happening in Texas and what's happening in Florida? Oh no, there's cases are going up. Hospitalizations have increased. Folks, that's called life and death as it always has been. Various morbidities ebb and flow. Hospitals sometimes are at capacity, sometimes they're over capacity, sometimes they're under capacity. It's called life and death every day. And there's no such thing as a perfectly safe life. Given enough time, everybody's mortality rate is 100%. So let's get on with our life and let's try to take the country back from the Marxist who hijacked it during the big flinch. Let's all just try to do that together, okay? You can live your life normally unless you decide you're going to be obsessed with one relatively minor metric, and that's how many people lived or died or caught the COVID-19 virus. You can live your life by that, and then put your mask on and stay home. Oh, no, take your mask off and stay home? No, I'm not sure. I don't want to give anyone the wrong guidance, all right? Anyway, it's just time to get back on with our lives, and I'll be back after this with normal news. Don't give up. Thank you very much, Vito Bratta, author and performer of at least 5 of the top 10 guitar solos of the hair metal era, which produced all of the best guitar solos ever, was the hair metal era. And I don't think that's even up for debate. But Vito Bratta has at least half of the top. Now, before I go on, I want to go back to the Marxist Revolution. Because I talked to you about how the Harvard professor Noel Ignatiev, who's just a straight up Marxist, how he basically constructed a new Marxist philosophy combining race, you know, so taking two potentially destructive elements and fusing them together into a new super weapon, which is Black Lives Matter and Antifa, the whole thing. Antifa, I like Antifa better. I got to stick with that. But that's what it is. But even Marxism is a philosophy dressed up in something new. because Marxism is just the late 19th century redressing up of the same old godless rebellion that has been occurring since Lucifer fell in the Garden of Eden. It's the same rebellion just dressed up in the late 19th century. It was dressed up in class envy and anti-Semitism. Oddly enough, by Jews, which is pretty weird. Shows you how diabolical it is. But it's just the same old rebellion. It's godlessness. It's Antichrist. It's all of that. Let's get on with, now we're back to normal news, talking about the Marxists who want to take down America instead of obsessing about one esoteric data stream about one particular esoteric virus. Let's just get over it. Because Rapper Huey, you know Rapper Huey, right? Come on, he's the Pop, Lock, and Drop It star. No? You're not familiar with the Pop, Lock, and Drop It? Well, that's Rapper Huey, and he's been shot to death in St. Louis.
Oh, no.
His real name was Lawrence Frank Jr., and he was shot at least once at about 11 o'clock at night on Thursday. And then the local hip-hop community lit up social media with tributes. Mm-hmm. He was, 32 years old. Anyway, in an interview in 2007, he said, quote, "My mama and daddy were on drugs. My brother was in and out of jail. The foster people was chasing me. It was crazy," unquote. So that's the result of when a mother and father abandon their responsibility. A young man may achieve some level of financial success, which Rapper Huey may or may not have done. I'm not familiar with his body of work. But a tragically unsuccessful life, putting himself in a community where he ends up shot to death at 32 years old, more than likely by someone he knew. It's all very sad. Meanwhile, from the war file, last Saturday morning, two Tampa Bay police officers were jumped by a mob. They got a phony call about a shooting, and they were dispatched to go and protect innocent people from criminals. When they arrived, they found hundreds of anti-police demonstrators were gathering, waiting to ambush them. The mob blocked off all four exits in the intersection. They surrounded the officers, shouting, throwing glass bottles. Both officers were struck on the head and were hospitalized when backup eventually got there and got them away from the crowd.
Wow.
The attack appears to have been highly organized. This is scary stuff, folks. The Federalist reports that rage has grown so extreme that it's possible to swiftly organize not dozens but hundreds of individuals willing to harass and injure police at random. Psychologists have shown that radical elements can make horrifying decisions as long as others in the group are unwilling to call them out. Mm-hmm. So this is what I got back to with, if you want to go out there and stand on the street corner with your Black Lives Matter sign and raise your fist, you are a violent Marxist terrorist. I don't care if you stand there peacefully. I don't care if you claim that you just care about police brutality. If you're willing to stand with people who've done this, you are a terrorist. You are a Marxist revolutionary, and you deserve to be arrested and subdued and defeated. And depending on what you're doing, if you participate in the tearing down of statues, if you're an iconoclast, you deserve to be shot and killed. If you want to start a fire at a Target or a Wendy's, you deserve to be shot and killed. If you want to loot a Target store, you deserve to be shot and killed. Have I made myself clear? I think I have. Meanwhile, in the politics file, broadcast networks were reminded by Newsbusters that broadcast networks spent over 7 combined minutes last Wednesday talking about the Washington, D.C. appeals court ordering the case against Michael Flynn to be dropped. 7 minutes, 7.5 minutes. That's right. The coverage also included suggestions that the attorney general is corrupt. FBI agent Peter Strzok wrote down what Obama told him And what Obama himself and Biden told Strzok and Comey to do. They brought up the Logan Act. The president brought up the fact that these are unusual times. These are unusual times. Make sure you look at things. Have the right people on it. Have the right people on it. So here it is, the attempted coup. Exposed right to the Oval Office. You get 7.5 minutes of coverage, and the coverage includes the suggestion that perhaps the Attorney General is corrupt. By the way, it really annoys me, okay, even in the allegedly conservative media, that the office holder's name has to always be mentioned. Because here in this article it says, suggesting that Attorney General William Barr is corrupt. You know, there was a time in the media when we didn't personalize everything. You could just say the Attorney General. You didn't have to say his name because what we were talking about was the office. But that's no longer true because everything now is a personal attack, either for or against Donald Trump or whoever Donald Trump has hired or fired. So they have to name, they can't just say the president. They have to say President Donald Trump. You can't just say the Attorney General. Anyway, it's just something I've noticed, and it's really only happens in the post-Obama. It's really a Trump thing. Actually, it might go back to Obama. I don't know. Back when the lines were basically drawn, the lines were drawn during the Obama administration for the current Marxist revolution. I remember the day I recognized it. And if you listened to my show back in 2009-10, you would have heard this. It was the day I was driving up Wadsworth Boulevard in the Denver metro area, and I saw students who had walked out of class with the assent of their teachers, with the permission of their teachers, to walk out of class and basically participate in a Marxist protest. I watched it. I can't even remember what they were protesting. I can't remember the pretext, but I looked at these 12 and 13-year-old kids. And I thought, this is the full-on Marxist. This is it. This is their generation. These are going to be their foot soldiers. Okay, those kids are now all in their mid-20s, maybe early 30s. This is it, folks. This is the revolution. It's upon us. So we'll go from the revolution and whether or not we can defeat it. Here's the thing, folks. It has to be defeated. And it has to be defeated with physical force by the government, or they will take the government. They will chop off heads and execute people. They'll have firing squads. They'll have it all. We've seen this revolution play out before. All right. From there, we go to five things Kerry McDonald learned. Debating the Harvard professor who called for a presumptive ban on homeschooling. I'm not going to name the Harvard professor because I've already given her enough press, but you remember. Well, here are the five things that Kerry McDonald learned debating that Harvard professor. Number one, there are people who believe the state should be your co-parent. And there's a lot of parents who believe that, too. That's one thing I learned, and I didn't even debate the Harvard professor. Random home visits. Number two, random home visits will be a weapon of the state. So these are things the various states are planning on how to deal with homeschoolers. The Marxists, how are the Marxists, the godless, the Antichrist crowd, how are they going to deal with homeschoolers? Random home visits, yeah. Number three, Kerry McDonald learned that private education is in danger. Number four, standardized testing begs the question, whose standards? Yes, the Harvard professor against homeschooling says testing of homeschoolers on a regular basis by public school authorities and basing permission to continue homeschooling on the results of the tests performed by public school teachers. Low scores on the standardized tests would trigger an order to enroll in school. Okay, well, that's one thing you don't have to worry about is homeschoolers having low scores on tests. Because we even teach our kids how to recognize Marxist revolutionaries, homosexualist philosophy, socialist philosophy, evolutionary philosophy. We teach our kids how to recognize all of that. So they can ace you morons out in a real test or your fake test. Because our homeschool kids are smarter than your educational institutional overlords. My homeschool student is smarter than your teacher. And number five, what was the one, Carrie McDonald, who, by the way, I apologize, but I don't know who Carrie McDonald is, but I appreciate her debating this Harvard professor. Number five, she learned that homeschoolers will win. Homeschoolers may not agree on everything, on much, but they agree on preserving the freedom to raise and educate their children as they choose as a unifying priority. In times of division, homeschoolers offer hope and optimism that liberty will prevail. That's why we're here, folks. We are the last outpost of American liberty on the political field of battle, our homeschoolers. We will be the last ones to be dragged off in chains. And we will not voluntarily submit to chains, like apparently the vast majority of people are willing to do. All right, what do we got? Fox News reports that Black Lives Matter President Hank Newsom, he was interviewed by Martha McCallum on CNN, and she asked him, what is it that you hope to achieve through violence? Well, that's because he had just threatened violence, which apparently you're allowed to do now. Hey, by the way, folks, threatening violence in a public forum like this, threatening violence is a crime. Swearing at a police officer and telling him he's a blankety blank, that is a crime. It's called disorderly conduct, and they should be arresting these people for it. Instead, they're allowing it to happen. And if they keep allowing it to happen, that tipping point is going to come, and the herd is going to follow, and the majority could be recruited against the police. Keep that in mind, folks. The majority of people could become, just like the majority has bowed to the masks, whether they believe in it or not, the majority could bend the knee to Black Lives Matter and take up arms against the police. And if you don't think that's a possibility, you just haven't studied history. Anyway, Hank Newsom, Hawk Newsom, I'm sorry, one of the founders of Black Lives Matter, he said, this country was built on violence. What was the American Revolution? What's our diplomacy across the globe? Says Hawk Newsom. So for any American to accuse us of being violent is extremely hypocritical. So that is a threat of violence. And a credible threat that's already been carried out. People have been killed. Law enforcement officers have been shot, paralyzed. People have been murdered. This is not just a threat of violence. This is advocating violence, which is a crime. This guy should have been arrested at the set of CNN. Anyway, he went on to say, if this country doesn't give us what we want, then we will burn down this system and replace it. All right? He cannot be allowed to say that. Why the Attorney General and the President have not dispatched federal marshals to arrest this guy violently, if necessary, I do not understand. And I'm concerned that it's a continuing of that big flinch I've been talking about since whenever I came back on the air, April. Anyway, and he said, I just want black liberation and black sovereignty by any means necessary. So you cannot be allowed to say that after there's already been violence that you advocated. And for the president, the governor, the mayor, the sheriff should arrest this guy. Oh, no, he lives in New York City. That they don't have the police commission. Oh, they continue to hide and watch the data stream of COVID-19 cases, new cases. They're concerned with that. All right. And so speaking of the big flinch, we go to the big flinch file, where the Federalist reminds us that in 1790, mobs pillaged Paris' treasured Notre Dame Cathedral because it symbolized injustice and systemic inequality. Statues of the Virgin Mary were removed and statues of the Goddess of Liberty took their place. Nearby at Saint-Chapelle, The revolution pulled the apostles from their pedestals, and priests who did not swear allegiance to the new order were sentenced to death and were executed. The revolutionary government mistook the 28 statues of the kings of ancient Judah. They mistook those for French kings. Why? Because they're all rich old men that we hate. We all hate our fathers. In the Place de Louis XV, the statue of Louis was torn down and a guillotine was erected. And the liberated space, similar to an autonomous zone, would see the execution of more than 1,200 prisoners from King Louis XVI and his wife all the way to the execution of the ringleader himself, Maximilian Robespierre. The Federalist goes on to call our attention to the fact that in the United States, mob vandalism began in 2017 with a statue of an unnamed Confederate soldier. On up to statues of Robert E. Lee. When the president worried publicly that the iconoclasm would continue to include Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, the president was mocked by Marxist reporters who said he was insane. The Federalist goes on to state that while Roman kings, French monks, and American Tories and Russian czarists were unable to defeat the revolutions that first tore down their symbols, today in the United States, we are simply unwilling. We are able to defeat this revolution, but apparently we are unwilling. And finally, the Federalist closes with some. They say, without a committed and targeted crackdown on this disorder and its leaders in particular, targeted killing of their opponents and critics will come next. It is coming next if we do not stop this. And it needs to be stopped with physical violence and extreme prejudice. All right, now from the Say You Want a Revolution file, John Kerry was speaking before a recent, he had a recent panel discussion for the Alliance of Democracies where he said the following. He said, quote, if people don't have adequate access to the ballot, I mean, that's the stuff of which revolutions are built. That's what he said. This is after the fires have been lit, after the police have been shot in the head, after people have been beaten and murdered in the streets, after the looting. John Kerry, he should be arrested for saying this. This is an insurrection. And if we don't respond to the insurrection appropriately, I'm afraid that we are going to lose what little liberty we have not already handed over. Let's see, I got so much more stuff. Drew Brees, I'm just not even going to, please. Okay, let's close with this real quick. Okay, this all, by the way, goes back to our enemies in China, I believe, in a large degree. AndMagazine.com says, we're now weeks into a nationwide insurrection. How have we reached a point where violence and lawlessness are not only condoned but championed? Why are the guardians of the First Amendment seemingly in league with those destroying the social order? Is it that the mainstream media is simply so blind in its hatred for Trump that they'll support anyone or anything that opposes him? That could be. But there are other factors. The Chinese Communist Party, propaganda and influence operations, directed at a national level by the CCP's United Front Work Department. Yeah, United Front mobilizes the party's friends to strike against the party's enemies. It's been greatly energized and expanded in recent years by Xi Jinping. It operates inside foreign political parties, diaspora communities, colleges, and corporations. The goal of promoting the Chinese Communist Party's interests. The express goals of the United Front system include undermining social cohesion, exacerbating racial tension, and influencing politics. Offices known as Confucius Institutes on dozens of U.S. campuses have long-standing and formal ties with the United Front Work Department. There are 81 such institutions in the United States. With the purpose, their purpose, according to the Confucius Institutes, is to shape American attitudes toward the CCP and communism. Students whose minds are shaped then obviously go on to careers, AND tells us, not only in academia, but throughout America, including in the media. Armed with massive amounts of cash and leveraging the lure of the Chinese market, the CCP has, in essence, bought the voices of much of the free press. Most of the major American media outlets are owned by parent companies. Those companies all have significant business interests inside China, dependent upon the approval of the Chinese government to safeguard those financial and other interests. So we've been sold out. We've been sold out, and we're running out of time to fight back, but I'm here to fight with you, and I thank you for being here with us. I want to thank my friends at RealScienceRadio.com and at American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.